What's up, Fight Fan? You're listening to MMA Daily, the podcast where we bring you the latest in the world of mixed martial arts. It is Monday, May 15th, 2023, and this week's episode, Almeida becomes a heavyweight contender. We'll talk about this last weekend's UFC event, UFC Charlotte, and the fight between Jairzinho Rozenstruik and Gelson Almeida. We'll talk about the latest in MMA news. The PFL had quite the shakeup regarding nine fighters. We'll talk all about that. We'll talk about the return of an English fan favorite in London this summer. And we'll cap off the show by talking about this upcoming weekend's UFC event, UFC Vegas 73, and the promoted main event between Mackenzie Dern and Angela Hill. My name is Gabriel Gonzalez, and I'm joined by my co-host, Natalie Zamudio.
Hello, Double G. All right, I am ready to get in to the MMA game. Are you ready?
I mean, I hope you're ready. I was going to say, you've been in the MMA game a minute. We've got 100 episodes.
The MMA daily game. Daily today. Day after Mother's Day. Let's go.
Yes. I obviously texted you yesterday. Happy belated Mother's Day.
You texted me. You're good. No belated.
Yeah. I hope you had a great one. You got a nice gift on Saturday, didn't you? I mean, the UFC on ABC really delivered. I thought that main card in particular was excellent. Let's start with the main event. Obviously, Gelson Almeida, Jairzinho Rozenstruik. Striker versus grappler. I think the thing that always shocks me about it, the thing that I always feel the need to bring up about Jairzinho is that he is very similar to Mark Hunt. I get it. When you look at, you know, some of these ripped guys like a Ciryl Gane and, you know, Francis Ngannou at heavyweight, I am aware that Jairzinho doesn't look like it. But when you look at his record in Muay Thai, kickboxing, and you see, you know, he's got so many wins, so many fights, and then you think about his debut, it's like, okay, you know, I get he doesn't look the part, but this is one of the most dangerous guys on the feet in the heavyweight division. And Gelson, respectfully for being 30 and has, you know, a fair amount of fights of his own, this is a big step up. You know, Jairzinho's a guy who's fought Ngannou and Gane and everybody else. And so to see Gelson pretty much go out there, you know, really just gets it going early and just, let's just say it, that was one-way traffic the second it got to the ground. That was just very, eye-opening at what level this guy is operating at, because Jairzinho has had his entire MMA career, certainly his entire UFC career, to know that guys aren't going to want to stand with him. If you can beat him, it's most likely going to be on the ground. And yet, for all of the work he's had to have done, He did not have anything for Gelson when he was on his back. He was really trying to minimize damage, escaping and back to the feet. He wasn't able to get real headway on anything. And obviously, Gelson finishes that fight, gets the submission, and that's all she wrote. What did you think?
Yeah, Rozenstruik had absolutely nothing on the ground, and it was a little bit surprising because, of course, we know what his specialty is, but you've been in the MMA game long enough, in the UFC long enough, you'd think that those ground skills would have developed. And fairness, in the heavyweight division, it's not as much of a concern against, you know, you think about the top opponents, they're not going in there trying to submit you. So, it makes some sense why Rozenstruik's ground game or ground defense would be, you know, not high, but this was zero. And when you know that your opponent is the guy who's going to want to take you down, you know, I would have expected a little more ability. However, you know, it could just be that Almeida's that good. You know, Rozenstruik tried coming in all right out the gate with a big swinging hook, missed, and then, yeah, like you said, it was one-way traffic. So it's a bummer for Rozenstruik, but if, you know, Almeida, I think, showed everybody, like, hey, I'm someone you need to worry about. Start working on that ground game. And I would like to see him against the next, I don't know who's above Rozenstruik on the rankings. Like, heavyweight division. I'm not, I just think John Jones and Stipe basically. So I don't know who would be a good opponent for the next one, but that's what I was thinking at the end of that fight. It's like, all right, who's game? Who's going to go up there with him?
If I'm not mistaken, it's a very odd one because heavyweight is one of those where everything automatically feels like a jump because guys don't go on long win streaks often at heavyweight. It kind of feels like one, two, three good ones, you're ready for a title fight. Like when you look at it, Jairzinho was number 9, Jelson was number 12. They're probably going to switch spots. Derek Lewis, obviously on a skid. Like, okay, Sergey Spivak, with respect to everybody else in there, when you look at the heavyweight division, obviously Pavlovich is leading the way outside of the title guys, John and Stipe. Spivak is almost like right there. You could honestly do Sergey versus Sergey, and I wouldn't be mad at it in terms of a merit standpoint. You know what I mean? But then it's like, all right, do you give Jelton a guy like Spivak, who's on a roll, but you feel like probably deserves a Curtis Blaydes or someone like that? All right, that's food for thought. You look at a guy like maybe Volkov. He's kind of been in that RDA. Like, you fight Volkov and win, you almost always get like a top three fight that's propelling you toward the title, right? Because he's so good and so experienced. So maybe fights like that. For Jelton, I mean, he called out Tai Tuivasa. I get it. Another striker versus grappler, popular guy. Not for nothing, you feel like maybe you're getting him at the right time, coming off two stoppage losses for Tai Tuivasa. So there's a lot to dissect there, but for my money, I like Volkov to potentially, like, okay, you beat a guy who's perennially top 10. Who's been close to the title, stays up there. You beat a guy like him. Now let's talk about, all right, a top four fight and maybe a title shot. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think he's 2 steps away from a title shot for sure, just the way this division is always rolled. I do like the Tai Tuivasa matchup. It would be a bad night for Tuivasa, I believe, especially as you mentioned his recent performances. But if we're talking about what gets Jailton to the title shot fastest, I think Tuivasa would be a good one because he's just the bigger name.
Yeah, I get you there. Like I said, I see a guy like Spivak there, and it's like, I'm looking at all these guys. You know, Volkov, it almost feels like he's on a run that should maybe get him someone above Volkov, but then it's like Tai, Curtis, Stipe, Sergey, Ciryl Gane, and it's like, bro, it's hard for you to find somebody right this second. So, yeah, there's a little bit of a holding pattern, particularly until July, because you want to see what goes on with Tom Aspinall. Which we'll get into in a few minutes, but to kind of tip the hand a little bit, I think what happens with Tom will have a big impact on post John Jones in November in terms of the heavyweights, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for
Yeah,
sure.
so we'll get into that. But look, big opportunity, and he really just made the most of that spotlight, I think, Jelton. So I'm excited. He's a different guy. Obviously, you always appreciate a breath of fresh air. In any division, so to have him perform the way he did, I was into it. I was like, all right, let's go. You know,
Yeah,
let's see
right.
him again.
Yeah, breath of fresh air is right. And, hey, we've got a guy who doesn't want to bang with you. Normally, you want to see that in the heavyweight division, but this mixes it up really nicely.
Oh yeah, absolutely. The co-main event, to a lot of people, and I'm not gonna lie, there was a bit of a feeling early in the week that I was like, are these guys, they're just treating them like the main event, even though we know they're not? You know, Anthony Smith, Johnny Walker. And I get it. Respectfully, this was the biggest pairing of big names on the entire night. And I'm not gonna lie, I thought it would be a finish. I thought we had a surprisingly competitive contest for as few dramatic shots. I mean, we didn't really get too much in the way of knockdowns or carnage that on paper, maybe you thought you would expect from Smith versus Walker, but instead it actually was a little perplexing. I want to talk about the fight before we talk about maybe the talk, and I don't know if you saw the clip, but we'll get into it. But pretty much Johnny Walker's range he fought at almost the perfect rhythm that Smith really wasn't able to get in there that often. He was looking to counter, he was minimizing a lot of the dramatic damage from a big, powerful guy like Walker. But the biggest thing I got was that Anthony was having trouble dealing with the approach of Johnny. He was just kept at the end of the shots. He wasn't able to close that distance enough. He wasn't able to string a lot of combinations together to shift momentum that Johnny just led the dance, plain and simple. And I want to ask, what are your thoughts on that before we talk about all of this, their whole conversation that started happening? I think it was in the second round.
Yeah, it was surprising. I mean, Anthony Smith is a dog. We know that. He finds a way to get in there. Even if he can't win, he wants to get in there and cause damage. And he could never just close the distance. That was a big issue for him. And Johnny Walker suddenly looked bigger to me than he has in a long time. And maybe it was just that, maybe Smith is on the smaller side. I don't know what it is, but I was like, wow, Johnny Walker looks like a Hulk in there.
Almost like the shoulders, right? The chest and shoulders I felt were
Yeah.
a little broader,
For
like he's been
sure.
lifting more on working on his chest.
Gotta repair that damage he caused when he did the worm drop.
It's
But
going well.
yeah. And so that was the biggest, visual difference that I noted apart from Smith. And I was just asking myself, is it that Smith's not himself, or is it that Johnny Walker's just so big and long that Smith can't get in there, maybe a little bit of both. But I was surprised. Smith was obviously injured in the leg at some point, right? And Johnny Walker was atypical of what we're used to, what we expect from him. Steady and patient. And I actually was thinking, this is smart. You don't want to do some stunt and get caught. But it also didn't make for the most exciting fight. So in any case, it was a very practical win for Johnny Walker. I wasn't calling my mom to put it on Channel 7. I'll tell you that.
Look, very methodical, I think, for Johnny. I think that that work he's been putting in with John Kavanaugh, it's kind of like it's been developing, and it feels like maybe he's getting a little closer to that finished product we expected. And maybe a little bit of that is Anthony Smith. Is he in, this guy's got, I believe, over 50 fights. Just professional, like MMA, not talking about like Jorge Masvidal. Those backyards Kimbo Slice on YouTube
Gotcha.
fights, you know what I mean?
Yep.
But my point of that is that 34 years old, had big fights, won some, lost some, and then you have this question almost, is there was talk about the retirement and all that, and I never like to think this way because obviously I would never want that for any of them, particularly a guy as professional and just cordial and just nice as Anthony
Yeah.
Smith. But there was a little bit of that feeling, kind of like Rory McDonald, and Rory said it after his retirement. He was like, "I'm training hard. I'm like in the gym, I feel it. But when I get out there and the rubber meets the road and the bright lights, it just doesn't ever come together anymore." And I was wondering if Anthony Smith is just feeling a little bit of that this many years in the game. Obviously, at 34, we talked about it, that stat doesn't really apply to the light heavyweights and heavyweights. But, you're a little older. You look at 205, and now it's like, all right, who's ahead of you? Walker, Jiří, Magomed, Błachowicz. And it's like, all right, does it still feel like you are in that running? Only he knows. I'll tell you, if you ask me, can Anthony Smith get to a UFC title in the near future? You gotta think, all right, so let me look at 205. Pretty much, he needs like three perfect fights if he were to get there. Like, if he was gonna go on the run that leads to a title shot right now, no setbacks, no losses, he needs at least three good ones. How long
That's
does it
right.
take to get about three fights? About a year and a half if everything goes perfectly? That is a big ask for anybody. So, does Anthony feel like that's what he's looking for, like about 2 years before he could get back to that level? Only he knows that for sure. But I will say that it did not inspire the most, oh my God, I am so ready to see Anthony Smith, this is his run, it just looked like he just almost looked a little deflated there. Oh yeah, going back to it, you got Rokic out there. Smith was number five. I want to say Smith was coming off a win, if I'm not mistaken, but it's like, yeah, like I said, Jiří, Magomed,
And
Blachowicz,
Rokic,
Nikita
yeah.
Krylov, I believe, looked good in his last fight. I mean, you have all of this stuff going where it's like, where do you go with Anthony Smith? I'm not sure. Obviously, Johnny Walker, I'll take him against Blachowicz, I'll take him Rokic, Magomed, give him any one of those guys. I think it'll be a fun fight, and let's see how well he does. But yeah, for Smith, it's more of a question mark.
Yeah, it is. And if I'm Smith and looking up at this mountain, the way you put it, three perfect fights, and that could be either total domination or a knockout. Those are going to be hard to come by against these gentlemen in the top four, right? And total domination would probably mean, since you're Anthony Smith, a main event, right? And that would probably mean 5 rounds. That's a lot to ask. And a year and a half, I mean, it's like you'd almost have to do a crazy Cerrone, I'll fight anytime, anywhere kind of thing to bypass that year and a half route. Just volunteer to be the backup for everything and volunteer to fight whenever.
Like
And
someone
then,
gets hurt twice and you step in on short notice and win them.
just that's the only way to circumvent this, a year and a half path. And even that's going to put you probably in a position where when you finally get the title shot, you're so beat up that you can't perform the way you want to. So I'm not counting the man out, but he's already done great things. He already had a shot at the title. It didn't go his way. He didn't show up. The Lionheart that we were seeing on the way to that title shot wasn't there that night. Okay, fine. But you also got to think psychologically. He's doing desk work, right? Like he's doing stuff, not commentary, but like he's doing stuff with Karen Bryant or like the pre-game shows, post
Yeah.
stuff. Yeah.
He's also on, like, people forget, he's Bisping's co-host on his
That's
show now,
right.
too.
That's right. So when you mentally, I think, see a path for your post-fight career that's working well, that you're enjoying, I think you kind of put a little less pressure on yourself. I just imagine you would. Right, it's like let's protect the brain that's going to keep me employed after I stop fighting. So I don't know. There's got to be a drop in motivation. Obviously, I don't know the man's mind, but just basic human nature. I think that's probably what's going on too, and that's fine, man. He's already securing the bag for the future, and he's already done a lot in the sport. Not saying he has to walk off into the sunset, but trying to reclimb Mount Everest, that's a lot to ask for no good reason, really.
Yeah, that's fair. Like I said, I mean, I know, like, I think it was after the, what was it? I don't know if it was like the 85 or 205 fight, and then he was like, I was just caught up in the moment. All this talk with Dana White, oh, is he talking about retiring or something? It could be just a little bit of the moment, so I don't want to say, this is it, because I still
Right.
like watching him fight, but yeah, after that fight, you ask these questions for a guy who's been at that level for so long. It's just natural.
Of course.
Did you see this clip? Because there was this talk, is there or is there not beef with Smith and Walker? It felt like Smith was saying, no, there's no beef, but then there's no handshake. Johnny is under the impression that Smith did not like him personally for whatever reason. And then this really comes to a head in the middle of the fight. They're having this full-on conversation, and I'm not gonna act like it was crystal clear, but essentially Smith, in the middle of the fight, in the middle of the octagon, says to Walker, like, you threaten my family, you're attacking my family. And Johnny Walker, with very clear perplexity in his voice, says, what? Like, and it, Smith, you attack my family. And Walker, with more emphasis, what? Like, and the mics capture this. I mean, what did you think of that? Because this is, I'm not gonna lie, the internet was not kind to Smith in regards to this.
Dude, I gotta tell you, like I was watching it. I thought he was I didn't go after the fact and try and get a breakdown of what he actually said. I thought he was saying, "You're attacking my leg." And I'm like, "Well, yeah, that's fine. It's just a little, trash talking
Kevin
in the
Holland
kick."
does it every week.
Right. Yeah. He's like, "Hey, why you keep kicking my leg?" That's basically what I thought he was saying. So attacking my family, that is super bizarre. And Johnny Walker, maybe that's why he didn't go in for the kill, man. He was like, "I don't know what this guy's on about, and I don't want to get on his bad side." Yeah, that is crazy, man. So nobody knows yet what this attacking the family comes from.
So, to everyone's knowledge, we haven't found a clip where Johnny said something about Smith's family whatsoever, literal or like his team or otherwise, right? It just kind of felt like they were just booked and okay, you got your skills, I got my skills, but there was no personal beef. The internet ran away with this to imply that Smith was having a PTSD attack in the middle of the octagon
Oh shoot.
over the home invader stuff.
Right, yeah. That's what I was
Which,
actually thinking about that right now, yeah.
I'm going to say this simply. Anything is obviously possible, but that actually felt like, I'll just say it, that felt like internet talk. That felt like people wanting to kick Smith while he was down. I felt like there's something we were missing, but I just felt like in the moment I didn't get this impression that this guy was seeing his prior attacker from that incident in Johnny Walker in those 15 minutes that were being televised, you know what I mean? But at the same time, what's going on? What are we getting? Because then part of me is like, I'll say this, Natalie, how many fights has Anthony Smith had? Has this been a thing? No.
No, it's not.
Secondly, I mean, I believe there's a mugshot out there. Let's find it. Does Johnny Walker look like that guy? I don't think so. Not many people look like Johnny Walker, respectfully,
No,
you know, with
that's a
the mohawk
ridiculous
and the hair.
Yeah, that's a ri ridiculous assumption for the internet to jump to.
Yeah, but there were so many comments about it. I was like, are we just like sheep running with it? I'm not
Yeah,
sure.
I think so. Somebody says it, somebody mentions it, and then that's it.
And everybody, oh yeah, that's it. And guys. But my point of that is that I don't know. I would like to hear something, because then also, this is a very. We've talked about it. You've heard him. Very eloquent, well-spoken, thoughtful gentleman
Yeah,
is Mr. Anthony Smith.
he is a gentleman. That's right.
But
Yeah.
if he something was going on all week where he saw his attacker in Walker, you're telling me that Anthony Smith, more importantly, the people around Anthony Smith wouldn't check him and kind of recalibrate him mentally a bit with their support?
Don't know, man. That's tough to say. Sometimes you kind of were. It depends. Not specifically for Anthony Smith, but there's been plenty of times in history where a team around a not well, not soundly minded person is just like, don't let anyone talk to him, and we'll just get through this, and then we'll deal with it after. So not that that's the case at all with Anthony Smith, but it could happen with anyone. But the triggering of PTSD, no, that's crazy. That did not happen. But whatever, man. Anthony Smith. Wasn't there somebody else? Like, didn't this happen before where he was like really mad at somebody and it wasn't even totally clear why? I feel like,
We'll find it and we'll get back to it maybe next week. But
yeah.
it's like, yeah, let me hold on. I'm gonna just say, you know, Johnny Walker's obviously very tan. The guy who invaded Anthony Smith's home is very white.
Yeah, so
Doesn't look like Johnny Walker. But
no, man,
okay,
he wasn't short-circuiting that's
I'm gonna leave it at that,
yep.
yeah. Anyway, before we move on, I want to shout out, did you see Ian Garry's knockout of Daniel Rodriguez?
Yeah, man, that was wicked. He's coming to make a name for himself for sure.
Yeah, honorable mention. He kind of just he's just hitting the right marks. He's hitting the right points. I like how he doesn't shy away from the Conor McGregor Ireland thing. He's very, you know, upfront about the fact that it's like when I was working at like I got the feeling it was like the Men's Warehouse of Ireland. It's probably a lot more designer, but you get my point. You're this teenager and Conor freaking McGregor walks in looking for a suit and you're an MMA fan. You know, Come on, 16-year-old me, if a Conor McGregor walked into my place of work, I might di have died and gone to heaven at that age. You know what I mean? I think it's a great story, and now Conor has given him the seal of approval, pass the baton, take over part two. I'm riding with you, Ian. I think it's great. I thought it was a great victory. I thought that that was a very key one because Daniel Rodriguez has never really been stopped like that, in UFC. Experienced guy, a guy that people were talking about. Does he have the best boxing in the welterweight division? I think maybe that talk has probably changed, but my point is that that was not. That should not have been as easy as Ian made it look. And now I do think that he is poising himself for a. In the next year or so, he could have a. He could be a very serious player in this thing. And I think that that's great. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I had the same feelings. This is a serious player that we're watching develop right before our eyes. He's got a great personality, the physique, the kicks, that's something that, even Conor McGregor, he has an interesting kicking game, but not like this. This is like Van Damme level, So this is exciting. I'm really looking forward to it. And yeah, he's humble, always paying homage to Conor McGregor, never saying I'm going to be the next one, just saying I'm also going to be representing Ireland, but I'm not replacing McGregor at all. So I like the guy. That was a great big win. It was, man, it was, I don't know how D-Rod didn't go out. That was like a baseball to the head, baseball bat, excuse me. That was a wicked shin to the forehead there. So, or to the side of the head. He's got something special in there to stay upright for that. But yeah, Ian Garry, man, I am looking forward to it for sure.
Yeah, so I mean, whenever they book him, obviously they haven't gone back to Ireland in a while, but whenever Conor fights Chandler, he already said he'd be into that. He kind of puts himself a little closer to that timetable by competing so shortly after March, so now we're in a better spot for all this. I'm into it. Going on some more stuff in the MMA world, the PFL. They had it was not good. So by now you've seen it. It was kind of still developing last week, but now we've hit the mark. Nine fighters suspended and out of the tournament. Chiefly amongst them, UFC veteran and new signee Thiago Santos, their other new signee Christoph Jotko, and 2021 champion heavyweight champion Bruno Capoloza. Another guy got a win, Rizvan Kuniev. I mean, you know what, Natalie? I saw this, and there was a lot of talk about, okay, well, they went to Las Vegas, did Las, you know, everything with Las Vegas. It's one of like the premier organizations, like their athletic commission. It's like
Correct. Yep.
California, Nevada.
Nevada.
Those are like 1A and 1B, like, and they almost follow each other, like what Nevada does. Most other states do. What California does, it's seen as the gold standard. And people talking about, did Nevada ask for more testing than the other markets PFL goes to, and this is what happened. But the point is, in what is still expected to potentially be a banner year for the PFL, you have several big name fighters, for want of a better phrase, screw the pooch. What are your thoughts on this?
I mean, this is a total decimation of the season, I think. Nine fighters, that's a lot. And yeah, you bring up a good point. What was it that Nevada did that the other, I don't know what other states they were in, didn't do commissions? And so Thiago Santos, that's a big loss. That's the biggest one, right? Biggest name. What I don't know is what the PFL policy is for drug. UFC has the strictest one. They're with USADA, some kind of I guess officially a partnership. But what does PFL do for drug testing? Is it just based on whatever state they're in? The commission says, okay, we're going to test your fighters and that's it? Like, is it just completely up to the commission?
I mean, there are other drug testing commissions beside or organizations besides USADA. USADA is obviously the one we know the most because everyone, their mom talks about it at UFC, right? For example, PFL can hire USADA. Remember, this isn't an all-year thing. It could be leading up to the fight only. They have a much smaller roster to pay for in terms of testing people. Not everyone's tested all year. For example, I don't think PFL is paying for USADA to visit Clarissa Shields all year. You get what I'm
Of
saying?
course, yes.
There's a lot of those little factors. But I don't know if it was more stringent testing, maybe that was required in Nevada compared to the others, and that's why we saw something. Could it be one of the more lightning in a bottle? How the heck, what are the odds all nine of them just happen to start trying to cheat at the same time?
Exactly.
And then there's always the factor, how often does this happen? And because there's not better testing, we just never know about it. That's out there too. But yeah, that's what my answer to that question in a nutshell.
Yeah, it's shocking, but also it's like not nine so many.
This isn't one card either. This is across all three.
Right, okay. Then it almost feels like just let them do what they're gonna do, right? Like, why even let UFC be the one that says we're gonna test everybody? But I kind of feel like you just gotta let them fly. Like, if they're all aware and they're all willing, because there's no way that the competitors, whether they're juicing or not, aren't aware that everybody else is, right? Like, there's no way that the folks who aren't aware of the folks who are. This is a bigger conversation, but it almost feels like there's so many, so many. Just let them do what they're gonna do. But then, what does that mean for where you can actually fight, hold fights? Not Nevada, apparently. But if I'm PFL, you can't be surprised. You have to have known, but also you have to pretend like you're surprised. And now what? Your season is jacked. What are you supposed to do? How? You have to decide now. Do you want to walk that line where you are like the UFC saying all our fighters are clean and this will never happen again? We're going to be strict and implement the most stringent policies. Or do you just kind of let this fizzle out and then keep going? Because it's expensive to do what the UFC does with USADA, right? I don't think PFL wants to get into that business, and Bellator doesn't do that either because it's expensive. So this is shocking. It's a decimation of the season, but I'm also asking myself, what the heck does PFL, how do they spin this? What are they going to say for the rest of the season or for the future seasons?
So it would be reaching to say that PFL lost all their people. They obviously still have several big names who are clean and in it. I look at it in the big picture. So for PFL, I think their biggest thing is, I hate to say it, but the success of this year may begin and end with their pay-per-view event. I think that when you look at the season, all right, look, everybody's back, Stevie Ray, guys like this, all of them are back. Brenda Loughnane, what have you. But when I look at the overall season, what's out there? Jake Paul may or may not fight this year. Okay, that's on the table. Francis Ngannou, most people are expecting a Francis PFL announcement to be the one that happens at the end of this. Okay. Quick thing on boxing. The big name boxers are not available for Francis this summer. They're focused. No one is talking about Francis Ngannou versus Tyson, Deontay, none of that. So now your question: will Ngannou fight MMA before boxing? We had this talk, so I don't want to make it a long one. If you're Ngannou, is that what you want? Potentially lose your value when you try to box again, or when you try to go into boxing. I don't know that that's smart business. I don't know if that's what he wants to do. So now you ask, would Ngannou wait until December to fight one of these guys? In which case, his MMA debut for PFL or whatever doesn't happen. Okay, Kayla Harrison, I don't know if you saw her MMA Junkie interview, but she was just like, I've kept thinking the cyborg fight is going to happen, and then it just doesn't. Twice now.
Jeez.
And now they're talking about end of this year. Kayla Harrison is unrestricted. There's no matching. There's none of that. And I'm going to say it. Her tone, and we touched on it last week, I believe. Her tone was like, I'm not going to go through this. I'm ready to fight these big names only for PFL to do this to me again.
Yep.
And I was. One, I was going to say, didn't you get paid a ton of money? But okay, look, everyone's got allowed to have feelings about anything, right?
Yeah.
But my point of that is that are we in a position where, what's the PFL pay-per-view if Jake Paul doesn't fight this year? What's the pay-per-view if Ngannou doesn't fight MMA first and he waits for boxing?
There is no pay-per-view.
Yeah,
There's
and it's like,
nothing.
what are you going to do? Kayla Harrison versus Pacheco 3? Take Pacheco out of the tournament, cut her a check for taking her out of it. Harrison versus Arlene Blanco. It's like, what are we doing, guys? So that to me is like, okay, on this, with the season, compounded with all of these little factors, make me wonder, okay, you kind of need someone to step up. You need to ask Jake Paul if he'll do it. You can't pressure Jake. He's holding the cards, right? He's gonna do it when he's good and well ready, when he feels he's in the best position to win this MMA debut. And all of that together is like, all right, where is PFL season? Because right now, what's their biggest issue? Sometimes it feels like a rehash of last season. It's like, all right, we know who's the favorites, and oh, they all won.
Yep.
Big surprise, and it's like, I get it. You want some parody. You want to feel some kind of change-ups that's like, all right, I'm invested in these stories. And when you're talking about getting the MMA audience away from UFC all the time, getting those that are UFC exclusive to PFL also, it's a tough mountain to climb. And that's really my point, breaking it all down.
It is. And I mean, there's not much more to add to that. They have some big names, the biggest names in combat sports right now, that are officially attached or most likely attached to their promotion. And that's the only way they have anything worth pay-per-view at all. No offense to Kayla Harrison, but she's coming off the loss again, like you said, Pacheco for the as the fourth time or third time. I thought they already fought three times.
They
Like
fought three.
no
They
one's
fought
gonna
three.
pay extra money to see that. Okay, so yeah, if they don't secure these two deals, or at least one of them, secure a fight with these big names, Jones, I'm sorry, Paul and Ngannou, then there is no pay-per-view. They should completely abort any notion of having a pay-per-view. Like, period. Because all it's going to do is put a stain on their brand when it fails, when it bombs.
Yeah, I think that without a big without one of those big fish, I think you're gonna off put the fan base to try to to try to go through the whole song and dance and tell fans that this is what they're doing after all that. It almost feels like you gotta wait. But then it's like, all right, did you just Kayla Harrison has said if she doesn't fight, the PFL is just pays out her contract and says, look, we said you'd make 750, 600,000. All right, we're just gonna pay you that straight up, and we don't even get a fight out of it. It's like, I don't know. We know PFL has always had a ton of money. That's how they run these events,
Right.
with very little in terms of live gate for the last few years. This is what, like, th this is bad. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what they do, but, like I said, I think the hope is that Ngannou considers fighting MMA again before boxing, but that feels like it goes against everything that, quite bluntly, Ngannou has so much skin in this game that it's hard for me to see that. And I think for Ngannou, a final note on that, after all this, if he were to fight a not a big name in boxing after all this that happened, I don't know that I would feel that's a success, It feels
Yeah.
like it's like okay, him versus Fury, him versus Wilder. If they announce it tomorrow, huge fight, one of the
Right.
biggest for the year. Bigger, honestly, than the return of Jon Jones in MMA. Let's be real.
Right.
Anything else where it feels like it's Ngannou versus somebody? I don't know if this pays off the way that we thought it would, and I'm gonna just leave it at that. So, where does that play into potentially PFL? Well, if you're hoping on Ngannou, now you're wondering how long is he willing to wait for a fight? And we just don't know.
Oh boy, all this waiting, just it's just annoying.
What I don't like, all right, Tyson Fury talks have like fallen apart for another fight for him, and I'm like, oh, well, that fight won't happen. And I see zero chatter about Ngannou. Zero about, well, let's do it. Gypsy King versus UFC King.
Yep.
And I feel like, is the talk just non-existent? Are they just, anybody? And here's my only thing about that. I don't know if they feel like he's always going to be around so you can make that fight anytime. Part of me wonders if because Ngannou is so hot right now, that a Tyson Fury doesn't want it because he's got to give Ngannou more pay-per-view for that fight. Tyson Fury fights somebody who's not Usyk or someone like that.
Yeah.
Tyson Fury gets the cut of the pay-per-view points.
Right.
60-40, maybe 65-35, you know what I mean? Ngannou, you have to almost split it a little closer to 50-50. And when you talk about the revenue they generate, that is money on the table that maybe Tyson Fury feels like he doesn't want to concede. So, but my point of this is that, like, we want these big fights to happen and get everyone on the timetable. When they're not, it hurts as a fan and a spectator. I know that's the business, objectively, but I'm seeing this happen and I'm like, it's right there. Why can't we have nice things?
Why can't we have nice things? Exactly. We don't break them.
Yes,
We just
thank you.
hug them and cherish them.
For real, it's like put it on the mantle and make sure no
Yep.
one touches it. Anyway,
Exactly.
but yeah, that's my whole thing with Ngannou and where we're at and how it could play into PFL. Anyway, to go into the next one, let's talk about some heavyweights that are ready to fight. Tom Aspinall taking on Marcin Tybura. I forget the date on this one. I should have written it down. But the fact is, the London card this July set to be headlined by the returning Tom Aspinall. You'll remember he had that knee injury after, right when the fight started with Curtis Blaydes. Been out a year. They wanted him in the March pay-per-view at home. Wasn't ready. Now he is. Natalie, obviously, Marcin is a respectable veteran in his own right. Tom is kind of, I would say, outside of Darren Till, and with respect to Leon Edwards, I feel like Tom Aspinall is that Englishman that the UFC has just been trying to build post Michael Bisping. Darren had it for a while. I don't know if Leon, because he's not as outspoken, he's a very reserved guy, doesn't talk too much trash and all that. That they just didn't feel like he was the lightning rod. But Tom Aspinall, who, mind you, doesn't really talk that much either, kind of feels like their guy. You are the next UK person that when we go to, the lovely country of England, you are that guy that will bring the people in droves. And why is that important? Obviously, at home, he gets another big shot against another top contender. But when you look at heavyweight, you look at Jon Jones retires, whether or not he beats Stipe, Pavlovich is right there. If you ask me, all right, let's say Jones beats Stipe, or even, whatever. Okay, Pavlovich fights Stipe. You got Spivak and you got potentially Tom Aspinall. And that's your title picture. That's the top four, if you ask me. Tuivasa coming off of losses. Derek Lewis coming off of losses. Curtis Blaydes coming off a loss. Ciryl Gane coming off a loss. And you got guys like this potentially winning? I don't really count the Curtis Blaydes as a loss. I mean, you hurt your knee in 20 seconds. That wasn't a fight. All of this put together could potentially leap Tom Aspinall into that stratosphere at a time when the UFC is clearly invested in going to England more, going to the UK. They love the fans, the reaction. Everywhere has a European contender series now. Bellator, PFL. To have a guy like that in title contention, I don't think is preposterous. And I think that if Jones beats Stipe and retires, they would make Pavlovich versus Aspinall for the vacant title. Plain and simple.
Yeah, I think that's right. Pavlovich for sure. And Aspinall, no offense to Marcin Tybura, but this is generous matchmaking in the favor of Aspinall, right? This is almost a tune-up fight for him, just to get him an opportunity to have a spectacular finish and then put him right there in that spot on deck, waiting to get moved up to that title shot when Jones, as he has said, will retire. Do you believe him? Do you think he's really done?
Honestly, heck yeah.
Yeah, me too.
I think he is so like, you know what? I'm at the end of this. I think we there's nothing more to prove. I
Right.
always felt like the Ngannou fight, had it happened, would have been a one and done. Honestly, I think that had he lost to Cyril, he would have retired. Now that he beat Cyril, he's like, all right, well, kind of let me just go 2 for 1 and then go on with my life. When you think about John Jones, his age, his time in the game, yeah, I think that everything just tracks that. Let's just take one final payday, go out on top. The picogram thing is what it is, but I leave with that argument of GOAT status. There you go.
Oh, okay, right on.
Yeah, but where does that play in for the Tom Aspinall's fight? Very important. So let's all keep an eye. Low key, I also kind of want, for just the comedic element of it, Sergey versus Sergey for the title.
And one Sergey has an H, the other one doesn't.
Yeah.
That's,
There
typo.
can be only one Sergey. I think the fans would just have a field day. Sometimes I
Yep.
want a little bit of a little bit of nonsense.
Yeah, you gotta make it fun sometimes.
Yeah. Let's cap off the show. Obviously, this Saturday's UFC event, UFC Vegas 73 Apex card. Mackenzie Dern and Angela Hill were supposed to fight this past Saturday. They get elevated to the main event on about 2.5 weeks' notice. Five rounds, if I'm not mistaken. And look at it. So Mackenzie coming off that tough loss to Yan Shonan. Angela Hill, resurgent. I think this is probably, if I'm being quite honest, I think this might be one of the biggest fights, biggest opportunities ever for Angela Hill. I know she's had main events, but Mackenzie, when she fought Marina Rodriguez, was quite bluntly, just knocking on the door of a title shot. And I think it felt like it might happen for her. Obviously, Angela, coming off a win over Emily Ducote, Lupi Godinez, but before that, lost to Tisha Torres, Lemos, Verna Jandiroba. And so it's kind of like, okay, main evented Karate Hottie, things like that. It's like, okay, she's been in fights before, but I don't remember the last time she fought someone who was like, you were right there for a title fight. And so the big point of this is that for Angela, this is a huge one to kind of actually put her in that conversation, as opposed to, that perennial middle of the pack where she's always been. And then for Mackenzie, obviously, if you are that girl still in the hunt, still in this, you've had a full camp now, technically 2 more weeks or 1 more week. This is the kind of fight you need to win. And now, stylistically, that's another kettle of fish when breaking down this fight. Obviously, on the ground and Mackenzie's on top of you is not a good place to be. Angela Hill does her best work on the feet. Both of them, Angela has gone 5 rounds, Mackenzie's done multiple 5-round fights. This becomes a very interesting fight. What about you?
It is interesting, for sure. I think, I have a lot of love for Angela Hill, as we know. I believe I picked her for Fighter of the Year. What was that, 2019, 2020?
Let's not talk about that one.
I was probably still in the throes of postpartum, whatever happens after that. I'll just give myself a little bit of slack there. Okay.
Valentina Shevchenko was right there, and you went with Angela.
I wasn't sleeping. It's just a complete change, you know. Wasn't
Right.
sleeping.
I'm
Wasn't
sorry
sleeping.
that just came out. I don't know where it came from. Anyway, go
Oh,
ahead.
I walked. I asked for it. I opened the door. Okay. So all that is to say, I like her. But I always feel like she kind of looks better, you know, hitting a heavy bag, right? Like when she's in the cage, she does the right motions and, you know, the right, she does, she's feinting. She's really good at feinting, but the punches that she throws, they never hit as often as I want them to, as often as it looks like they're going to hit. For all the years that she has in the UFC, and we know now that when she started on Tough, she basically had no experience fighting MMA and just kind of went for it, fake it till you make it. For all of that, I feel like she still hasn't come around to figure out a way, I should say, to put it all together. Looks good, but just isn't as effective. And Mackenzie Dern, I would say, on a shorter timeline, has improved her MMA game a lot more than Angela Hill over this longer period of time that she's been in the promotion. Mackenzie Dern, we don't have to talk about her ground game. We know it's there. And her striking has improved a lot. Her physique has improved a lot. She's in a lot better shape. And I just feel like this is sort of Angela Hill at the gatekeeper position now, because there's still a name there. She's still a recognizable name in the division. Mackenzie Dern is a bigger name, but this is the moment for Mackenzie Dern to prove that she can beat a veteran, a tough veteran. With, you know, not the best record. We're almost double, we're almost like, I think she's 15 and 12, right? So
Yeah.
almost as many losses as she has wins, which is fine. In any case, Mackenzie Dern has this advantage on the ground, and I don't think she's going to feel the need to go to take it to the canvas anytime soon, because she's got heavier hands. Her form isn't as good, but she has bombs. If she hits you with a big looper, it's going to hurt you and it'll probably put you down. So I think she's going to try to get Angela Hill onto the ground with punches. Once she's got her on the ground, then she can either ground and pound if that's available or submit if that's available. And that's how this is going to go. I don't think Angela Hill, for all her experience, is going to be able to do much to stave off a takedown from Mackenzie Dern if Mackenzie Dern just goes straight in for a takedown. So Angela Hill's best defense is to just avoid getting hit, you know, keeping a distance, a safe distance. But then what that means is she's not going to be able to hurt Mackenzie Dern much at all. So in the end, I think Dern will find an opportunity to hurt Hill with her hands and then take her down and finish her, like I said, either ground and pound or submission. That's probably be round three or four.
Yeah, I think the thing about Mackenzie, there's two things you really wish you'd see her add to her game. Not for nothing, cleaner striking, right? If she,
Yep.
you feel like if she had the striking to match her ground game, she'd probably, turn into Ronda Rousey with so many title defenses. I get it. Probably the second thing is kind of like just wrestling. Sometimes it feels like she's so good on the ground, but her efficiency in getting opponents of a certain level to the mat sometimes isn't consistent, right? So I think this is the thing. When she talks about the layoff since the Shannon loss, I think it's going to be like 7, 8 months since that fight. I think that all of that is like, okay, no fights haven't been booked. You have a, I'll say, maybe not the highest regarded opponent. This feels like everything you should have to be able to have made the growth in your game. Let's see the wrestling. Let's see some of that because I don't expect her to turn into Israel Adesanya on the feet.
Of course not, yeah.
But my point is that I do want to see something that says you are even better at getting opponents to where you want them to be on the mat with wrestling, things like that. Just another weapon in that arsenal. Because I think if she has that, there's every reason to believe she should handle this against Angela Hill. If it's a little bit more or less the same, now it becomes can Angela rise to the occasion? Because she has that, really fast, almost like a bit of a herky-jerky style. She bounces a lot and, uses that range and everything. But now it's like, can you execute that potentially for 25 minutes against someone who does load up on some power and isn't, a pushover herself? Like, she has, she'll go in there and throw hands with Mackenzie. All of that now becomes a factor. Now, once again, it gets to the mat. You feel like that's a wrap. You feel like if Angela could get 15 minutes on the feet and survive the others, could be an interesting fight. So we got to really see what we get out of this. So, but yeah, I actually favor you. I'm gonna go second round submission though, actually. I think Mackenzie's gonna show off a little bit of work, kind of put it into practice, but the opportunity's just gonna show itself, and that's gonna be it.
All right.
Yeah, so. No UFC next week. No, I think really anything next week. It's kind of like a early summer vacation before we kick off for the, really loaded summer schedule. But the fact is, we'll take a little bit of a break. We'll be back to recap everything. Goodness knows if Francis Ngannou comes out and says I'm signing with PFL Monday, maybe we'll do something. But I'm gonna say that, we'll save it for the next show. But yeah, guys, we'll be back. Remember, like, comment, subscribe. We'll be back next week.